Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good Friday morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Thanks for being with us this morning. I hope you had a blessed holiday. I hope it was relaxing and fun and whatever it is that you needed it to be, that, you know, you could get your rejuvenation on and get back to business or continue your vacation, whatever have you. But glad you took the time out to be with us today. So we still got to, you know, like I said, take care of a little business. So I want to talk a little bit about the economy, and we have Paul Shelton from Warwickshore with us today to give us the rundown in terms of what has happened and what's going to happen the previous and this current month. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much.
How was your holiday?
Holiday was good. Good. It was good to take some time, spend some time with family and hang out a little bit, relax, turn off the work mode and just enjoy the fourth. What about you?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. I did a little shopping and a little, I would say peach patrol. My husband and I bought some peaches out at Lucas Nursery. Big box peaches, and they're very good. But, you know, I knew it was going to be too many for us. And, you know, I'm probably going to make a cobbler and a smoothie and some other stuff. But still, so just kind of went out and took some peaches to some family and friends yesterday and got a chance to say hey, you know, in person. So,
nice.
Yeah. So now I know one thing that happened today, this morning already. The jobs report. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening with that?
Correct. So we did have, which I've always said is my favorite economic indicator, the unemployment report, or the jobs report was released today at 8:30 this morning. And what we saw for June is there was an increase in non-farm payrolls by 224,000, which is good, which is positive for the economy. There was an expectation that we would see an increase of about 197,000. I believe that's what the consensus was among analysts. But
okay.
We surpassed that. So showing that there is still some strength in the economy. The economy is still dredging along. There's still hiring that is taking place. We did see some downward revisions, however, to the previous 2 months, but there was nothing that was significant that really would derail the trajectory of where the unemployment rate has been moving to. So currently, right now, we're sitting at a 3.7% unemployment rate, and that's in part due to a slight tick up in the unemployment rate, but that was due to an increase in the participation rate, which is a good thing as well. So there's more people in the labor market are actively looking for employment, and that's always a positive.
Now, does that report break down in terms of blue collar and white collar workers? Does it, and what other dynamics are in that particular report?
So the report does break it down completely, and the ADP report that's released as well does take a further dive into all the specifics behind the job report. So it breaks it out by manufacturing, by auto, retail sales, and various factors. And I believe going into this, into the month of June, for the month of June, I should say, all of the sectors except for retail, all the sectors in the economy saw a positive gain in employment gains, except for the retail sector. Now, that's partially due to the cyclical nature sometimes of retail. One of the things we talked about before, you know, some months back with the retail apocalypse, you know, reviewing that theme, you have some stores that are closing. So there's some structural things, and then there's some seasonality that takes place with that. We've had college graduations that took place in May, and a lot of those graduates were moving on to their careers, and those jobs that they left behind took place in the month of June. So there's a few different caveats to that, but, you know, all in, the report was fairly positive for the month of June.
And it sounds like it might have been a little bit better than last month, or was it? Because it wasn't last month kind of lower than expected?
Last month was lower than expected, and I believe we came in at 75,000 jobs that were added last month, and which was completely off target or off where the consensus was expecting. So it was good to see that the number was revived for the month of June, you know, going into July. So it seems like we'll have, you know, hopefully some more momentum, and maybe the month of May was just a one-off event.
Now, speaking of July, you know, we just, like I said, had the holiday yesterday, and probably a lot of people vacationing before school starts to check back in next month. So how do holidays tend to usually affect the economy, and what do you usually see?
We typically see some positive responses, you know, around the holiday season, whether it's around, you know, the latter part of the year when you get into the Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday season, or even around Memorial Day, Labor Day, and around the 4th of July, which are typically our more so spring, summer holidays. So you typically see an increase in consumer spending, which is good for retail, which is good for the overall economy. And you typically see an increase in traveling that takes place. And a lot of that traveling is helps out with energy too. So there's a slight uptick in gas prices and returns on energy consumption when it comes from a market investment standpoint. So overall, typically there is a positive response around the holiday season when it comes to the growth of the economy.
Okay, I'm going to take another left turn here for a minute. And something I didn't get a chance to ask you about earlier, but speaking of the shopping, now I noticed, like I said, I did go out yesterday. I had to kind of, when I go to the gym, I go in the pool a lot, and my swimwear was suffering, so I had to kind of replace a few pieces. But
okay.
the thing that I noticed that I keep, and I had been trying to kind of modify my spending anyway, but it was really hard to not, to find something that was made in the USA. You know, just about, I tried on, I won't tell you how many swimsuits I tried on, but most of them made in China, almost all of them actually made in China. And I know there've been kind of, I guess, some backing off on the tariffs that we were going to impose, but how would, let's say, modifying this everyday spending have an impact, as well as maybe the tariffs?
So modifying everyday spending when it comes to buying U.S. or, you know, shifting away from China explicitly in that nature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say that it would have an impact. I mean, we're so globally interconnected, our society is, and China is making such a large part of the things, like you said, the things that we see every day in stores. You can go down the list from, you know, home appliances all the way down to backpacks. There's so many things that are produced in China. So, you know, a shift in spending or, you know, in tandem with the tariffs, it would hurt it. One of the things that I'm seeing more so from a shifting standpoint is, you know, with the tariffs that are taking place, a lot of U.S. manufacturers are starting to shift their attention more so towards Vietnam and, you know, shifting manufacturing to other countries of that nature to try to avoid a lot of volatility with the trade war and the tensions in China. So from that standpoint, it hasn't been very robust, but, you know, it could eventually take its toll and could be magnified, especially the longer, you know, this trade war is drawn out. Currently, we have a truce, which is in place, that there will not be any additional tariffs levied. But, you know, that's just an agreement right now in principle that has nothing, that hasn't been, you know, formally drafted. And there's, even when it is formally drafted, we don't know either parties, what sides will, you know, breach that agreement anyhow. So I would say that there is a, it's very possible that, you know, a slowdown in spending or shift in consumer spending and preference would kind of, you know, weigh on, you know, the trade war as well. It kind of helps shift the that tariff conversation, you know, in a positive way, hopefully, for the U.S.
I wanted to ask you, too, if our emphasis, let's say, on technological jobs and more white-collar jobs are affecting or impacting what we do in terms of things that are made here in the United States.
I think it definitely is, and that's one of the things that I've studied for some time now. And if you go all the way back to the Great Depression and, you know, throughout and after the Industrial Revolution for this country specifically, we've shifted from being more of a manufacturing-based economy to be more of a service economy. And, you know, that couldn't be more true, especially in Central Florida in the Orlando area, where we have such a strong, you know, emphasis on the service-based industry with the theme parks and the hospitality industry here locally. I think that as we continue to become overall an aggregate, a well-educated society, a well-educated economy in the United States, there's going to be a shift away from some of those more blue-collar, you know, factory jobs that we've typically seen. We have a huge shift in technology that is taking place where, you know, even down in the elementary school levels, they're teaching programming, you know, in some schools, and there's a lot more emphasis, a greater emphasis, I should say, on technology and technological advancement, which allows, you know, for a deeper root of education throughout the society. And when you have that deeper root of education, it's harder to get, you know, those master degree levels, those PhD levels to go back and say, here, take a job on the assembly line, as opposed to creating an industry where they will, you know, use an assembly line and outsource those jobs. So that's kind of what caused us to shift away from some of those blue-collar jobs. But in aggregate, it should be overall better for the economy because it'll lead to, you know, a greater good for the common.
All right. So I know I've kind of got off on a tangent a little bit, but, you know, as we were talking, a couple of those questions kind of came to mind. So
yeah.
What else are we looking at in terms of what happened last month?
So last month, which was starkly different from the month of May, we had a significant increase in performance on the S&P 500. All the equity markets performed very well last month in the month of June. So the S&P 500 rose, you know, just under 7% for the month. Same with Japanese equities. They rose about 3.2%. And in China, there was an increase of about 6.1%. in our equity markets, which is good in aggregate for the global economy to see that. Well, some of the things that we saw geopolitically from last month was trade communications between the U.S. and China improved. Now, I say improved, and then I put an asterisk next to that because it's been a seesaw effect ever since negotiations started. They improve, and then they fall apart. They improve, and they fall apart. So right now where we are is that they have currently improved, and it seems like talks are beginning to progress past the stage of I'm able to levy a tariff on you, so I'll do the same to you in return. So some of the nitpicking back and forth has seemed to subside And hopefully there's real negotiations in place to move forward. Hopefully the truce to reduce additional tariffs or preventing additional tariffs in the future will allow true negotiations to take place now at this point. Some other things that we saw actually was a positive in the tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. So this was the first time when Trump entered North Korea in the DMZ, which is the demilitarized zone. This is the first time that a sitting president actually was in North Korea in quite some time. So that was a positive. And it seems like we're heading towards a climax with North Korea being able to denuclearize, you know, the whole peninsula, which would be good for the global economy as well. But just like with the trade talks and with China, there has nothing has been, you know, inked yet in pen, and there's no there's really no timetable for anything to take place.
I was going to say, when you said not inked, that's kind of the thing that kind of bothers me in terms of, and it would be nice if we were still back in those days where you had gentlemen's agreements. That's not necessarily
correct.
The case anymore. You really have to have everything accounted for in writing. And so far, you know, from what I've seen in this administration, there's not been anything concrete in writing, just a lot of talk, a lot of chatter, a lot of photo ops, mostly photo ops, and no substance with that. But I'm sorry, I'm probably getting off on a tangent with that.
No. I completely agree. And that's one of the things that there's been creating a lot of volatility and the frustration in the equity markets is the lack of concreteness, I should say, in all the negotiations that are taking place. Historically, like you said, you know, a gentleman's agreement based on word and a handshake was good enough to last until everything was inked on paper. And it was respected on both sides. And it seems like we've gotten into a season, our time in our economy, where that's no longer the case, which is unfortunate. So it's causing a lot of gyrations, a lot of discomfort, a lot of volatility in markets. And that's really leading down, you know, into corporate America. As CEOs and chief financial officers of some of the larger corporations in our country are not able to fully forecast hiring, aren't able to fully forecast, you know, their financial picture and whether they take out additional money for expansion or anything like that, because there is just nothing concrete. And my biggest fear is that with the current administration in election mode, we may not see anything concrete, unfortunately. So we can potentially go a full presidential cycle without seeing anything in concrete or seeing anything inked or signed, which would not be, you know, positive, because that just leaves us in limbo as investors, you know, throughout this whole cycle, throughout this whole time period. So that would be a huge, I feel, disservice to our economy, and it'll also just create further volatility.
Wow. Okay. So, like I said, I'm not an economy nerd per se, but I, you know, try to pay attention to, you know, because I know this stuff trickles down and stuff like that. But like I said, I didn't notice that. It's like, okay, we're all happy and everything, but it's a feel good moment and everything. But what does that really, really mean? You know.
Correct. It's a feel-good moment, and it's the timing of those feel-good moments are very, you know, can be questionable at times too. You know, sometimes leading into the end of the month or leading up into talks on the election season, we're starting to see, you know, some feel-good rhetoric that are coming out about trade negotiations, about North Korea. I'm not implying that this is all done because, you know, of pending elections upcoming, but it would be nice to see something actually put into concrete, put into writing.
Definitely. We are here with Warwickshire advisor Paul Shelton. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Hi there. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks for so much for being with us today. We are talking about the economy, getting an update, figuring out where things have been and going with Paul Shelton of Warwickshire. And if you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. So what else is making big economic news right now, Paul?
Well, one of the other things that, you know, we've noticed is over the last month, we've seen an increase in crude oil prices, which is pretty much energy prices. It's been a fairly hot, warm summer thus far, start to the summer, and we've seen some traveling that's taking place, you know, over the initial holiday season and over this 4th of July weekend. And so just before that, we've seen prices in crude oil increase by about 12%. So we're up a little bit, trading at about $57 a barrel, which isn't bad. That is a very good range to be trading in. And one of the reasons I mention that is because the United States, as I mentioned before, is a large exporter, a large producer, and large player in the global, you know, economy when it comes to producing oil. So this is potentially a good for the United States as oil prices, you know, rise a little bit. So a lot of the oil shales that we have off the coast and a lot of places where fracking takes place inside of the United States becomes more profitable. So that's a driver for the local economy for the United States. So seeing an increase in that is always a good thing to a certain degree. You don't want it to increase too much because then, you know, high oil prices leads to higher gas prices, which acts as a de facto tax on the, you know, American consumer as well. Monetary policy, it's one of the things that we've seen, hasn't really changed much over the last couple months. There is some belief that there would have been a near-term decrease in the policy rate and interest rates, but we've been seeing rates decrease organically on our own across the whole yield curve, which again, lower interest rates is good for the overall economy, especially when it comes to real estate, taking out loans, car loans, or loans to fund any home improvements, businesses, and things of that nature. So currently, right now, the Federal Reserve is still at a neutral policy stance where we are right now based upon current inflation and what the market is doing. And I believe with having a positive jobs report that we've seen today, there'd be no reason for a near-term cut in interest rates at this point. So I think we're pretty good on that standpoint. The one thing that we have noticed in our research is showing us that's causing a little fear in the market is dealing with the yield curve itself. So we're looking at the yield curve, which continues to flatten, and a large portion of the yield curve is inverted. And inverted means your lower term, you know, maturities are given a greater yield or higher yield than your longer term maturities. So currently, a 3-month yield is yielding about 2.2%, and a 10-year treasury is yielding 2.05%. So the 10-year is lower than the 3-month yield, which is saying that investors are more confident investing their money for 3 years as opposed to 10 years. Typically, when you see that happen and when that stays that way for a long period of time, the economy typically leans towards heading into a recession. We're not completely at that point yet, but it is a cause for concern, something that, you know, Warshore Advisors is looking at from an analytical standpoint as being a catalyst for some trouble down the way.
Let me ask you why it seems to me, at least let's say in my industry, I noticed that some of the predictions that were happening last year in terms of what was going to happen to in 2019 or by the end of 2019 have not occurred. For example, one example is the interest rate. There was a feeling at one point last year that the interest rate in real estate was going to go up and end up in like 5.25, you know, or something around there. And they're down and they're pretty good right now. Why has this year been such a hard one to predict?
I think that it necessarily hasn't been extremely hard to predict. Some of those predictions for 2019 that were cast from 2017 and 18 were predicated on rising rates at that time. So if rates would have stayed normalized and rising during that time frame, you know, it's very possible that those predictions would have leaned more towards being correct than incorrect as they are today. I think the biggest catalyst and the biggest thing that has caused interest rates to not rise as predicted is the global interconnectivity of our economies. Right now, the United States, and over the last 3 years, several years, the United States has been a very, very strong economy when you compare it to Europe and when you compare it to Japan, other, you know, developed, you know, economies out there. And one thing that happens when you have an economy that's thriving like this and you have strong interest rates is a lot of international investors and domestic investors, they'll flee and invest more assets into the United States. So the more international investors that you have from the European theater and from the Asian Pacific that are actually investing in U.S. treasuries because they're providing a higher yield than other countries, you're going to have somewhat of a compression on the interest rates, and it's going to kind of keep them muted to a certain degree. Additionally, you know, Europe and Japan has not been doing as well as the United States. So we've been at a point where we've had diverging monetary policies around the globe. The United States was in more so of a tightening monetary policy by raising interest rates, while Europe and Japan and other, you know, economies were doing the opposite. So you have kind of the effect of the globe compressing, global economies compressing one of the larger economies in the globe, which is the United States. And so it's kind of muting all interest rates all across the globe. So we unfortunately haven't seen rates rise as high as they were forecasted to. Which from an investment standpoint, we would like to see higher rates, you know, that increases in returns and increases overall wealth for, you know, domestic investors. But at the same time, the lower rates are advantageous for the real estate market. They are advantageous for those that are able to go out and buy and fund real estate and fund purchases and do those home improvement projects that they've, you know, looked forward to.
Okay. I was just curious because it just seems like what you were preparing for in terms of preparing for this year seems to not necessarily have totally manifested itself in terms of the economic predictions. So,
All right.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I wanted to get into that some more with you and then also talk a little bit about what we can expect for this month. So we're here with Paul Shelton with Warwickshore. If you have questions about the economy, he's the guy to ask. The number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Depp Simmons with Farrell Realty, but you know me as G from G's Power Hour. Much of the time when I'm not engaging with you on my show, I'm dealing in real estate in beautiful Central Florida. But because I'm here, that doesn't mean I can't help you wherever you are. So if you're looking to buy, invest, relocate, rent, or sell, please give me a call at 407-968-9387. That's 407-968-9387. And let me help you with your real estate needs.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720, Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We're here with Paul Shelton of Warwickshire. We're talking about the economy, what's going on with it. And I want to ask you about, you know, there's one, I guess you could say, group that's saying the economy is good, the economy is great. And then there's people that are saying that there's bad economic news. Can you talk about how that can be both at the same time, or is there one that's more true versus the other?
I think that it's all in perspective. You know, some can see the glass as half full, some can see it as half empty. There is economic data that suggests that the economy is doing well, such as what we saw today, unemployment.
Right.
You know, rate is low. The jobs report was good. There was a large number of farm roll, you know, payroll jobs that were increased. And then you can look at other things too, such as manufacturing that seems to be taking somewhat of a dip in manufacturing production. Inflation hasn't panned out as high as expected, which we were just talking about with interest rates. And some existing home sales data seems to have been flat over the last, 18 months to 2 years. So if you look at some of that, then you'll feel that, the economy is not well suited. It is not in a good position to continue to thrive. But typically when you see, albeit, those things aside, typically when you see an economy that has very advantageous interest rates, low interest rates that we have now. We don't have extremely high oil prices or gas prices as we did historically coming up into the Great Recession. We don't have a significant issue with lending from the standpoint of big banks offering and being able to make loans and having health in the financial system. When you look at those things in the construct of the current monetary policy and the current stance of our, the employment of our economy, we're poised to have some positive performance on the current runway and where we're going in the near-term future. Like I said before, some of the things that I fear is, possibly having any, significant slowdown in real estate movement, having any significant issues that are happening geopolitically, such as with North Korea, such as with the trade war between the U.S. and China. And outside of that, I feel like the economy is poised to do well. It may not fly at an extremely high level, but it may be more so moving sideways, slightly up for the foreseeable future.
Okay, so let me ask this based on something that I saw out of the Washington Post story. While we're talking about the economy is good, this particular story says 40% of Americans say they still struggle to pay bills. Is that on the economy? Is that on the various individuals? Why is this?
I believe one of the major things that happened when we left the Great Recession that we saw most recently is that we've had a structural shift in our economy. And that structural shift really took place with the demand for employment and the employment demand and the skills that are offered. As you mentioned earlier, we've shifted to being more of a technologically driven society, a more technologically advanced society. And, you know, one of the things that happened is a lot of skills of many of the workers were not able to be transferred over to the new talents that a lot of employers were looking for on the other side of the Great Recession. There was a lot of regulation that took place in financial reform, a lot of regulation throughout various industries that took place that required different forms of technology to be used in various industries in order to employ those new employers and new employees. So one of the things that you typically see whenever there is a structural shift in employment is a lot of skills become outdated, and a lot of people have to go back to school either to retrain in new skills or subsequently they may ultimately leave the job force or become underemployed, pretty much settling for employment or jobs that are available to them because their skill level or the skills or the education they have is no longer in high demand by the economy. So I believe that was a big premise of what happened, and that, that created a kind of a crater in our economy for a large subset of people that were unable to really make it out and recover from the Great Recession that we've seen yet. So a lot of those people that were living paycheck to paycheck or had to take a job that was underemployed or had to get into a situation where they're trying to go back to school to catch up and rebrand themselves and acquire new skills, they're in a point where the economy hasn't fully recovered for them. And the scary part about that is if we move into another recession and they're still at the point where they haven't fully recovered from the previous recession yet, then that can be a compounding effect on not only the United States, but the global economy in aggregate.
Is there a problem with what jobs we value most? And the reason I ask this is because we talk about the technological jobs, and a lot of them pay a lot of money, but at the same time, you talk about all these people that need to get retrained for these type of jobs, which is going to cost time and money in order to do that. And by the time they get trained, they're going to need to get trained again, probably, because, you know, the jobs are always progressing.
Correct.
But the reason I ask that is, like, I passed McDonald's one day, and there was a sign up on a billboard saying they were looking for a maintenance worker. And they said, pay up to $12 an hour. Now, I know there are some people out there that would be giddy to get up to $12 an hour, but to me, a maintenance worker, and I don't know what all that is required. There was no job description or anything on the board, obviously, but I'm looking at something for someone that's very labor-intensive, possibly long hours, no room for upward mobility in terms of, you know, being a maintenance worker at McDonald's, as far as I can see. Shouldn't that person, with all you have to do in terms of maintaining a restaurant, you know, the mopping, sweeping, cleaning behind people, restrooms, all that type of stuff, I'm assuming that's part of what it is, maybe maintaining equipment, whatever that job entails, to me seems like it's worth more than $12 an hour.
Correct. I would agree. And at $12 an hour, that's not enough to get by, unfortunately. And with the amount of inflation that we've seen in our economy, the you know, price of gas, comparing it to where it was in 2000 to where it is now in 2019 is starkly different. It's not enough to get by on. And that's a really tough place, and I know it's $12.
Because you're not hiring a student, you know, or
correct.
You know, because the student's not going to come with that kind of skill. So if you're hiring
correct.
A maintenance worker, there's some skill that's involved, and that to me, that skill should be compensated for. But
That's correct. That's correct. I agree. That's not where we want our economy to be.
No, but those are kind of most of the signs that I'm seeing, not necessarily having the dollar amount on there. I'm not sure what the dollar amounts are, but most of the signs that I'm seeing that are saying we're hiring or now hiring are those types of places.
Correct. So
the jobs that are out there aren't really cutting it for people that need to support a family.
Correct. Yeah. And the scary thing about that is the wealth gap only increases when that happens. So the wealthy gets wealthier. And unfortunately, those who are unable to attain that wealth that they want to have and that pursuit of happiness that they deserve have to continue to accept the jobs that are lower paid. And it's hard to get out of that cycle. I mean, if you fall behind, you know, like many Americans living paycheck to paycheck are just one crisis away. There are some work that I've done with the local organization here that deals with the invisible homeless. The invisible homeless, I don't know if you ever touched on that basis, but the invisible homeless are often the ones that have jobs, that have the means to pay for their things, and cannot, you know, particularly qualify for a lot of services because they do have the employment, but they're, you know, one car accident away, one flat tire away from being in a really, really bad situation economically. So that's where we see many of our brothers and sisters in this country and still in that situation. And a lot of it is, it's easy to say, you know, if you get more education, you can better your situation, but it's still a process. It takes time. You can't go out and, you know, start school today and then have a degree tomorrow and get hired the day after that. So it's a time. It's a process that takes years. You know, people have families, they have kids, they have things they have to do to take care of the current stance now. So it's a large issue that this country has, and hopefully one that can be addressed on the campaign trail and not just highlighted on the campaign trail, but hopefully something will be done about it, you know, in the upper level of our government.
Because this is the time to start sorting out that mass group of candidates out there by, you know, writing the letters or making the telephone calls or making it known that you want answers to the questions about, you know, how come we can't close the wage gap, or why is it that we can't improve the wage gap, you know, among other things. You don't hear a lot about on-the-job training. You used to hear a lot about on-the-job training. Because to go out and get skills for yourself costs money and time. Like I said earlier, I remember when I got my real estate license, I was leaving work at 5, having to go to real estate classes by 6, and in between 5 and 6, I was in probably a McDonald's parking lot or something like that, grabbing something, some dinner, because I didn't want to eat too late, and then trying to study also in a parking lot. You know, then going in the real estate classes I took, you had a quiz before class, at the beginning of class, and you had to test it or a quiz or whatever at the end of class. So, you know, by the time I got home, the class ended at 9. By the time I got home, you know, it's time to go, you know, go to bed, go shower, go to bed, whatever, start all over again. So it's a lot to ask of someone who is working a regular job to go and spend the little money that he's getting to take the classes that he needs. What has happened to on-the-job training? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, and that's really a sad thing, because I know in the education system here locally in Orange County, because my father was a teacher at one point in time when he retired from the military. He taught OJT, which was the program where high school seniors would leave campus for a part of the day and go to a vocation. and go to an employer and be able to sit in with that employer and learn that vocation. And that was part of things that were great in that respect. And one of the things that I've always, you know, had in my mind, you know, when I hear a lot of things about, you know, poor wages for Walmart and different things and different employees and different industries, it's fine, it's helpful to increase wages, but the more you increase wages, the more costs are going to increase. So it's going to be, you know, forever fleeting issue. But I think that a lot of employers, and this is getting back to the on-the-job training, a lot of employers would benefit from being able to offer in tandem, and this would have to be something that's passed legislatively, but in tandem with retirement benefits, such as a 401k or 403b or things of that nature, offer a separate pot of money and say, okay, and instead of giving you a raise from, you know, $15 to $17 for this minimum wage for a particular, and this is just an example, let's take this extra $2 per hour or whatever it comes out to be annually and put into a separate account that's for education, just like a 401k. And you're unable to bring this money out without tax penalty, you know, just like a 401k. But if you're using it specifically for education, for higher education, or something that you can train yourself with, whether it's a designation that can help with your current employer or current job now, then that's perfectly fine. And then that'll be a way where the employer can essentially pay the employee more and incentivize them, not just by giving them cash, but also by giving them cash and the opportunity. And in tandem with that, I believe if a lot of industries, such as the financial industry, such as, you know, the service-based industries that we have in our society, if they were to partner with the local schools, high schools, universities, community colleges, and implement a program of that nature, that would, you know, shift and change the overall, you know, good for all in the society.
We're here with Paul Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We are talking about the economy, and we're going to find out what we can expect for the month to come. The number, if you have questions for him, is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour, Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Do you need tile installed in your home or business? Then John Robinson Tile, LLC is the company for you. We have over 60 years of experience installing tile. We do bathrooms, kitchens, and so much more. Give us a call at 803-529-0092. Check out our website at www.johnrobinsontile2.com. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too. Just search J. Rob Tile or John Robinson Tile. We're licensed and insured and Schluter certified. If you need tile installed, we are your company. We believe in laying hands on everything that we do. That's John Robinson Tile Installation Service for new and old homes. Renovation of kitchens and bathrooms, installs all types. That's John Robinson Tile, the number 2.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. The number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. Here with Paul Shelton of Warwick Shore. So, what are things looking like in terms of the economy for the month of July?
So, the month of July marks the first month of the third quarter. So, we'll be seeing a lot of companies that will start to report their quarterly earnings for the second quarter of 2019. So going into next week, we'll have about 249 companies that will report next week, and then the following week, another 630 companies that will report their quarterly earnings. So some of the expectations that are coming out are kind of mixed as to where we will be. I know Samsung was one of the larger firms that announced today that their expectations for the second quarter are to have a revenue decrease of about 56%. Now, this was initially largely thought to be because of the trade war and a lot of sluggishness in demand, which potentially it could be. Samsung reported that their sales for, some of their microchips and handheld devices, the mobile phones, did decrease somewhat, but they're feeling that there's, other reasons for the decrease, such as back when they were having a lot of the previous model that were catching fire and had the defects with them in that respect. So I'm really looking forward to the next 2 to 3 weeks and the full month of July to really see how a lot of the companies in our society, a lot of domestic names that we're used to seeing, such as Walmart, the Walgreens, CVS, a lot of those stores, as well as a lot of the financial institutions that we see in our neighborhoods, such as JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and SunTrust, seeing how those quarterly earnings came in for the second quarter of 2019. Very interested to see if there is a big emphasis from the CEOs on those conference calls about the trade war, which, there's been chatter in different industries about the trade war, but with us being about a year and a half or so into, this trade war that we have now, there's really some effects that are expected to be seen negative for most energy, for most industries, possibly positive for some sectors, primarily the companies that are smaller that shift all their production into the United States and away from China and really don't have any exposure to China. So primarily that's what we're looking for, and that's where, us as a firm, we're looking at over the next 3 to 4 weeks what will happen with that. As always, we'll be looking at the beginning of August to see what that unemployment rate looked like for the month of June to get a good reading on the economy then, and then try to forecast, going back to school and planning for kids returning to school.
Oh, yeah. Can't believe it seems like we just got out.
Yeah. It goes quickly.
Yes, it does. I keep thinking we had longer vacations when I was in school, but maybe that was just wishful thinking on my part. But So now the tariffs, how much of an impact do they have on small businesses versus large businesses?
So small businesses have really, and it really define a small business. Let's look at a smaller corporation that's producing a good that's only sold within the United States, as opposed to a small business such as a neighborhood restaurant. So if you're looking at a smaller company that's producing goods and shipping those goods across the United States, those companies have fared fairly well. Because they don't have the exposure to China. They had not reached the growth where they were large enough to outsource a lot of their manufacturing to China. So those companies have actually flown under the radar and survived most of the volatility that was produced by the trade war. That hasn't been the case for the larger companies that were very exposed to China and that have been highly exposed to China for quite some time. So from that standpoint, the smaller companies have fared fairly well.
Okay. So what should we be – before I go to that, I want to get back to retail because I heard also that apparently this holiday season kind of had a retail, type of – impact that almost rivaled Christmas in a way, or slowly getting there, where by doing a lot of the shopping in July is kind of competing, I guess, or I guess on the same level or getting to be on the same level as shopping during the winter holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving time. Is this new or has this been going on for a while?
I think this is more of a new thing, and I think it's really driven more so by the power of online shopping. I remember growing up, you know, you would wait and say, well, let's wait and see what the prices look like, you know, on Black Friday, or let's wait till the holiday season. Maybe we can find a better deal then and at that time. Our global society has shifted so much to using Amazon or, you know, going to every retailer that we need to or that we want to order from and be able to order online and have it right then and right there at that time. That convenience factor has really, really driven, I believe, a shift in the preference of shopping and the whole appetite. So a lot of demand that was pent up for the first 10 months of the year and typically shifted towards, you know, November and December is kind of now sifting and being spread out throughout the whole 12-month calendar.
Okay. So what other things lie ahead? I know you were talking about we getting ready. Like I said, I can't believe it. I saw already time for that. And also, too, I guess I wanted to ask about with the summer vacation, and I think you mentioned a little bit about the gas prices earlier. What I wanted to ask also about the impact of alternative energy on, you know, on the gas prices and the petroleum industry. Is there any type of increasing impact that you're seeing on that?
I think that there will be.
Okay.
And what our data is showing that, and if you look at the maps and infrared maps that shows natural gas deposits, looking at alternative energy, natural gas deposits around the world, one of the places that has the largest and one of the greatest storage of natural gas deposits is the United States of America. So as we continue to shift, and I think this is something that may be a 20, 30 to 50 year horizon, as we continue to shift from solely being based on using coal and crude oil to actually using natural gas and cleaner forms of energy to fuel our everyday lives and solar and things of that nature, I see a significant shift from and wealth from Middle Eastern countries to OPEC-driven countries, possibly to the United States. So that's something that, you know, you said, is there a potential impact for? I think there is a significant impact for. There's a lot of places, and I've heard of a lot of stories over the last 5 years of people living in Pennsylvania and different rural areas and kind of being like a, you know, the oil rush, not knowing that their farm or their land was on large deposits of natural gas, finding out and being able to see large profits, you know, from that, seeing a significant increase in their overall wealth because of that. So I think one of the things, alternative energy will be something that's going to drive us, you know, 20, 30, 50 years forward, especially since the United States is such a large player in the global energy factor.
I'm sorry. I was going to ask you, and like I said, we're running out of time real quick, the self-driving cars, how much of an impact is that having, and are those mostly gasoline-based, hybrids, or electric-based?
Well, from what I'm seeing, most of them are electric-based, and a lot of new technology that's being driven through Tesla is trying to shift mostly everything to be electric-based or self-driving cars. Recently, they actually started a self-driving, I believe, a little bus that's going around the Lake Nona area. And to be one of the first caveats for, you know, self-driving public transportation. interesting to see where that's going to go, you know, where the self-driving vehicles and all those things are going to go heading forward into the future. And that's, like I mentioned before, structural shifts in employment. Those are one of the things that will cause a major structural shift, because a lot of those employees working for public transportation would no longer be needed if there's a major shift to self-driving vehicles.
Paul Shelton, have a blessed weekend, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. You have a blessed weekend as well.
All right. Talk to you next month.
Have a good one. Bye.
You too. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Have a blessed day, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Open your mouth. Come on, let's go. You gotta open up.